You're listening to another great podcast in the MyMac Podcasting Network.
It's time for the Geeks Pub. I'm Tim Robertson, and that's David Cohen, and this is our last podcast of 2024, David.
Where did 2024 go?
Well, we have three more days to figure that out, at which point we move on and we just call it a new one.
Yeah.
So Christmas is over for my family here, and New Year's is for everybody right around the corner. I don't really care, to be honest. You know, Christmas was on a Wednesday, so that was kind of weird.
Yep.
Because Sunday is my day off, right?
Yeah.
So then I worked Monday, and then we closed very early on Tuesday, but I was really busy. So closing early on Tuesday, Christmas Eve, felt like a Saturday because we only work half a day on a Saturday. And then Wednesday, I had the day off because it was Christmas, so that felt like Sunday. And it's just weird. And then I worked Thursday all day, which, by the way, I was extremely busy. And then I had Friday off, so that felt like another Sunday. It was weird. So it feels like I'm in a time loop right now.
Well, I'm even worse of that because I've been off for the last couple of weeks. But because Christmas fell on Wednesday, it did feel strange in terms of keeping track of what day was when.
Yeah.
And we had a very a very eventful Christmas day. Because my mother and her friend were coming over for late lunch, not because it was particularly, because we're not big Christmas celebrators being Jewish, but just because it was a day and we had to eat and you know, nothing was open, and my wife was halfway through cooking a very nice piece of beef and frying up some potato latkes because it was the first day of Hanukkah as well, which we fried food on Hanukkah, and all the power went out. And we very quickly realized that it was the cooker that was tripping the power. So every time we turn everything back on and then re-enable the cooker, the power would trip out again. So obviously it's quite difficult to cook a meal if every time you turn the cooker on, it trips the power out.
Could be a problem.
Yeah. So we ended up having to gather the half-prepared meal up into containers and then take it over to my mum's place and finish cooking it there. And then we were stuck with what the hell do we do about the cooker. So we had to then go out the following day and buy a cooker, which we're still waiting for. So we've been eating takeaway for the last few days because we can't cook anything. And it's been a pain in the ass, to be honest.
Hmm.
Yeah. So
gotta have a short somewhere in there or something.
Yeah, well, that's what it is. And you know what? So here's the thing. You think, okay, so there's a short in the cooker, so I'll have to get somebody out to look at it. And then you think, but it's Christmas. And nobody's really going to be working until the first week of January.
Correct.
Yeah, and then you've got to find somebody who's available and who can come out. And then they've got to try and locate the fault and fix it. And then you think, well, the cooker's 8 years old anyway, and then you think, well, so it's really time is money, and you think you almost might as well just go out and just replace it rather
so
than
when you
trying
say
to get
cooker
the fault
you're
fixed.
Talking like a stove top.
The stove, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's what we call them here. So yeah, the oven, the double oven and a hob on top, and I think it's in the oven because we were using the oven, but we can't be sure. And the problem is, in a modern house, when the power trips off and it takes the entire house out, it's even more of a pain in the ass. So it's not just the fact the cooker wouldn't work. The fact is we couldn't really use it until until it was fixed.
So yours is all electric. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just could not face the idea of waiting for two and a half weeks in the hope I could get it fixed. Versus just going out and replacing it is what we ended
well,
up
well, two and a half so. Weeks comes by and they come out and look at it and, oh, there's a part, but it's back ordered. And
exactly.
It's about 30 days before I can get one. Once I get it, we'll schedule time to come out. Oh, we're talking 2 months. No.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So
for all the money that you would have been savings, you know, just going out to eat every day, just buy a new one.
And it pains me because my default is to try and get something like that repaired.
See, my default is to figure out what's wrong with it and fix it myself. That's what I just did with my oven.
Well, yeah, but I don't have the skills for that. And not only that, one thing that affects us a little bit more here than it does you guys in the States with your electricity is that our voltage and current, default voltage and current, is 240 volts, 13 amps.
I know, your government's trying to kill you guys.
Well, you get that wrong and it's lethal. I mean, quite literally lethal. And American is 120 volts and a lower current, and so it isn't quite as lethal. And I don't like burning my stuff down or killing myself. And so
I can usually figure out what's wrong with something.
Yeah, I probably could have figured it out, but I don't know whether I could have fixed it and been confident it was safe. And that's the other problem. So,
mine went out, the oven just simply would not get warm. It kept coming on, but it wouldn't get warm. So what I found out was there's this one little thing that tells the gas that it's okay. Hey, go ahead and push gas out because it's safe.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't reading. So I figured out that was the part that was wrong. And I replaced it. I think it took 2 days because I had to order one. And it was a pain in the butt to fix it. It was. I had to unplug the stove. I didn't have to disconnect the gas because ours is a gas stove.
Yep.
And then I had to basically disassemble the inside of the stove. I didn't have to pull it out. I could get through it from the inside of the stove. And that was a good opportunity to clean the stove since, yeah, I'm right there.
Yeah.
And it wasn't all that dirty, to be honest. But reaching in there and hooking up something and screwing it in when you can't really see what you're doing, that's kind of a pain in the butt. But it worked fine, so...
I'd have been more inclined to have a go at it if it had been a sensor or an element or something like that, maybe even a fan, but something which is actually causing electrical fault that's tripping the circuit breaker, to me, is that's danger place. So
usually something like that, if it's not on the board itself, it's usually a wire and you can usually see it spark or you can see that it's been melted or a rodent's eaten. So usually that's pretty simple. If it's breaking the circuit, that's almost always what it is, unless one of the boards is shot, which case there's nothing you can do. But usually it's a wire that's gone wonky on you. People don't think of wires as going bad. They do, especially if a rodent decides to take a bite out of it, or just over time it just melts. It's just improperly touching the side of the stove and it's sparking and so usually that's not too difficult of a fix if it's blowing the circuit breaker. But not that I'm encouraging you to go kill yourself trying to figure it out, but
well, new ones coming tomorrow anyway. Yeah, so
what the hell.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Christmas for a second. I got a nice little present that I'm very happy with so far. It's the PlayStation Portal. I keep wanting to say portal, the PSP
portable.
Yeah. It's not. It's the Portal.
It is a portable portal, though.
It's been out for a little over a year now. But the reason I never was interested is because, at least initially, it was designed to stream games from your own PS5. And it's like, well, my PS5 is sitting right there. What do I need to stream? To a smaller screen? That doesn't make any sense to me. Well, you could take it with you. Yeah, but can you really? I mean, you're going to stream from your home Wi-Fi network over the internet. That just doesn't sound like it's going to work very well. And from all reports, it really didn't. But what Sony did over the last month or so was they have their PlayStation, what do you call it, their online thing.
Is it PlayStation Plus?
PlayStation Plus Network, yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Well, if you are a subscriber of their highest level, which I am, and I have been for years, there's a couple hundred games or so, I think. That's the right number. Could be a little less, but it doesn't matter. That it can stream it from the internet directly to the portal. So you don't have to connect to your PS5.
So you're playing, the games are running in the cloud.
It's streaming from the cloud.
Yeah, that's right. So it's running in a data center somewhere. It's not running on your PS5. It's running in Sony's data center.
I think it's kicking down enough to the portal so you could play it there. It's not loading, an entire map or every... It's giving you what you need to play the game right then.
Yeah.
Which is fine. That's what a PS5 does anyways. It's not loading every single thing on a game disc. when you load a game.
No, but all the processing has happened in the cloud. It's not, the portal is just basically just a screen and key, a screen and controller to the game. Yeah.
Yeah. So
okay.
I started and messed around with probably four or five different games. I tried streaming first and it from the PS5, and that was terrible. It was just terrible. And I'm literally right next to my router. And if it's terrible for me on a high-speed router, it's stupid. But the whole, and this is, I guess it's still in beta, but streaming from the PlayStation Network worked great.
It's weird that would work better because the data's coming much further than from your PS5.
Mm-hmm.
So it's strange that works better.
I think it's probably because these games are coded to give you chunks to play on the portal rather than the PS5, which is just acting like a streaming box itself. So
you believe that architecturally the games are actually running locally, they're not running...
Correct. I think they're sending enough code to run locally for what you're doing.
Okay.
And it works great.
If that's the case, I don't understand why they don't just enable it so you just download all the games locally.
It doesn't have enough built-in storage.
Well, yeah, but I don't understand why they didn't build it like that in the first place.
Sony's weird about stuff like that, though. They've never really quite understood the portable thing, which is ironic when you figure they came up with a Walkman. I mean, if anybody would understand taking something with you, it should be Sony. But, you know, they had the PlayStation Portable PSP for a number of years, and they released some good games on it. But, boy, they just did not know how to market it. It was a superior game system than anything Nintendo was doing.
Oh, yeah.
It still sold like nothing.
Well, I think the first one was reasonably successful, but it wasn't Game Boy successful.
No.
And which is what they wanted.
Well, it's because the games were almost expensive as at the time a PS3 game. And
That's always been part of the problem. I mean, actually, the Switch still has that problem today, that the games are very expensive for it. But it hasn't helped the Switch back. Yeah, well,
Think of the Switch as a full game console, whereas they never thought of that with a 3D or a Game Boy, or it was always a light version of what you could have hooked up to your TV.
Well, yeah, that is actually quite an interesting point, because as good as the PSP and even the Vita, which came out afterwards, which sold far less than the PSP
And it was a good system too.
And all the Game Boy systems, they've always been technically inferior to what you can plug into your TV until the Switch came along, where basically it's the same device.
But here's the thing.
And there does seem to be a mindset thing around that, which is, you know, I'm prepared to pay bigger prices for something that's plugged into my TV on the games than I am for a handheld version.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? But here's what I think happens. Well, at least historically back in the day, Nintendo was smart that they were creating games specifically for the handheld.
Yeah.
Whereas Sony was repurposing the PS2, PS3 games to play on the handheld and charging almost the same price as the quote full version of the game. And I think that's the difference, that Sony was thinking it was all the same thing, whereas Nintendo was smart and go, no, the portables are smaller, less powerful. That doesn't mean they're less fun. We will create games for that system that will take advantage of portability, and you don't have the highest graphics or anything like that. Whereas gameplay is the core feature, not graphics, not, oh, look, it looks as good as it does on the TV. And that was the biggest problem that Sony had.
And also as well, I think the other difficulty that Sony had was that the way they're still structured like this today, even for their first party titles that are made by Sony, they're actually made by subunits of Sony that are effectively are game studios.
Correct.
And the problem there is that if the game studio has to make a game for two Sony platforms, and they did, it was like PS2, PS3 very often for PSP games. So they've got three platforms to support: the PS2, the PS3, and then the portable. And those systems are all are not directly compatible. So that you're creating a lot more work for a game that ultimately is going to sell a lot less. And so I think over time, game studios become less interested in doing it because the amount of work is broadly the same, but the audience is much, much smaller. And that's been a problem all the way through. Nintendo doesn't have this problem because they're not structured like that. When Nintendo makes a first-party game for their systems, it's Nintendo making it. And they have a team within Nintendo, but it's all part of the Nintendo whole.
But it's more than that, David. It's that they were creating games specifically for the handheld that people actually wanted, and they never did that with Sony. There was never a game that sold that system. And there was totally games like that, like Pokemon and stuff, that 100% sold Sony's handheld system, or Nintendo's handheld system. That's the biggest difference. It's that Nintendo is a gaming company first. Sony is an electronics company first.
Yeah, a hardware company.
That's exactly right. And that is the biggest difference. This is why when people always say, oh, someone's going to finally beat Nintendo and blah, 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 they're not. Microsoft is not a gaming company. Sony is not a gaming company. Nintendo is.
Yeah.
That's the difference. That's why Sony and Microsoft will never catch. I'm not saying they'll not have good games. They do, 100%. But they'll never catch that, whatever that thing out in the wild is, that mentality that people have with a really good Nintendo game. It doesn't matter how good or bad the graphics are. It's about the game, how fun it is to play. And nobody that makes their own hardware understands that better than Nintendo. Nobody does.
Yeah.
I mean, the Switch has been out for, what, a decade?
Pretty much, yeah.
And they have some of the best games on it still.
Yeah. And they're only just about to replace it.
Yeah.
And the you know, everyone's going, oh, we can't wait for the Switch 2. The Switch 2 will be great, don't get me wrong, but it will be the same. It won't be any more as powerful as other systems you can buy. And that'll be fine for Nintendo.
Because it's going to be optimized for the games they want to create over the next decade.
Yeah.
That's what it's about.
Yep.
So is the PlayStation Portal worth $200? For some people, I would say no. If money's tight, don't bother. But if money isn't that big of a deal, $200 isn't that big of a deal, and you want to play with it, I think it's worth it.
I mean, $200 is not a huge amount of money for a gaming system.
Well, but it's not by itself, though. That's the thing.
No, that's right. I mean, you do have to factor in the cost of the PlayStation subscription as well to make it work.
I think it's $130 a year or something like that.
I mean, if you want to do the equivalent, you need Xbox Game Pass and then some sort of portable device. And Game Pass supports more devices to do the same thing.
Yep.
You know, you can do it on a tablet or a phone. And if you use a controller, you could argue that you're not getting a dissimilar experience. or you can't do it on the Switch, but you could do it on, say, one of these little Android handhelds that some of the companies saying you and there sell, and there you're looking at the same sort of money.
Yes.
But obviously, with Sony, you are getting a level of engineering, design, and quality that probably exceeds anything that comes out of China.
When I'm streaming games from my PS5. It looks blocky. I think this thing's only 1080, which, when you're holding it that close to your face, is fine. But it looks blocky as well. There will be some graphics.
Yeah, there will be some graphics compression going on as well to make it.
But it's not when it's streaming from the PSN network. So that's why I know it's caching. It's not 100% game based. They're caching information.
Right.
It's impressive. I'm the feel of it is really good. The screen is fantastic.
My principal concern with something like that would be that Sony loses interest in cloud gaming and just takes the service away, and then the thing goes back to its original purpose, which you said you don't want to do, which is local game streaming. So
I'm also hoping the hacking community eventually gets around to it.
Well, I was going to say I'd be happier if it was capable of doing something else as well, like running something locally. But if I were in the market for one, which I'm not because I don't have a PS5 and so I don't have a Sony account, and therefore I won't be interested in playing streaming games. And if I did want to do that, I have other devices I could.
Oh, I do too.
I'm looking forward to. I don't know whether they have clients for other devices or whether you have to have their Sony gear.
No, it's Sony gear. Sony gear doesn't. Yeah. Sony software doesn't play well outside of their own ecosystem.
Yeah, never has.
They're kind of like Apple in that regard.
Yeah.
I will say the one that I'm looking for. Well, I was going to say I'm looking forward to a new. Boy, it's really hard because as much as I like my Steam Deck.
Yeah.
It does feel a little old in the tooth at this point. And the funny thing is, it feels more ancient at this point to me than my Switch does, which the Switch is 10 years old. But now, I was going to say I'm looking forward to the new version of that more than the Switch, but I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, since
I'm going to buy them both, so...
Yeah. Since I bought the ROG Ally, which is the handheld PC equivalent to the Switch of the Steam Deck, I haven't used my Steam Deck virtually at all.
The screen's better,
Because, you know, it plays the same games and it plays more games because it's more compatible and it has better performance.
Yeah,
because
it's good with Xbox, yes, correct?
Well, it's a PC, so it runs everything that runs on the PC. So most of my games I just play locally. I don't really cloud game at all. So, but the thing is, it runs games locally better than the Steam Deck does because it has more grunt.
Yeah.
So, it just doesn't make sense to me to use the Steam Deck. So I probably will move it on at some point this year. And I wouldn't, unless the Steam Deck 2 was substantially better than what I have now, I wouldn't upgrade. But, you know, that's just me. I think there are plenty of people out there who will, and a lot of people really appreciate the simplicity you get with the Steam Deck. That, you know, there's a level of guaranteed compatibility built into the Steam system that Valve supports. You know, in some ways they're kind of a halfway house between what we were talking about with Nintendo and Sony, in that they're not making the games, but they do own and operate and manage the platform that the Steam Deck uses, which is Steam itself.
Yeah.
And they spend the time and effort ensuring levels of performance and compatibility for the Steam Deck as part of promoting Steam itself. So
it's still a little clunky, though.
Yeah.
There are still games that I download thinking, and it's almost unusable. Yeah. I mean, it's this wasn't really ready.
Yeah, sometimes there are games that are claimed to be verified and claim to be work very well on the Steam Deck, and for one reason or another, either they issue an update that breaks it, or 90% of the game works well, but there's one part of it which doesn't, or something like that. You get that. Now, don't get me wrong, if you're using a Windows handheld like a ROG Ally or something, that imagine that multiplied by 10.
Yes.
It's much more complicated to use than a Steam Deck.
But in some respects you kind of accept that because, okay, it's this thing.
Yeah, it's a trade-off.
But when it's Steam Deck and it's their software, you just kind of expect it to work.
But the problem is they don't control what the manufacturers do. And we are living in a bad time for video games at the moment, in that everybody is pushing stuff out before it's ready to hit a deadline. And even if you have the world's biggest and best PC, or even a console, these games come out and they're not ready. They're not finished. And it takes them 6 to 8 to 12 months to get them finished after they're released. And us poor buggers have gone out and paid for them first day, kind of have a crappy experience. You know, there are hundreds of games that... In fact, I was reading some of these roundup stories the last few days, and there's plenty of ones that say, oh, you know, when this game launched, it was terrible, and now 8 months later, it's much, much better. And it's Game of the Year. And it's just like, you know what? I wouldn't ever give it Game of the Year if it launched in an unusable state, because that's just beta testing on paying customers, and I don't like it.
Let's switch gears here. I was reading this article on Giant Freaking Robot, which, by the way, is a good, really good website. You've watched The Orville, yes?
I have, yes.
I think Orville is great. I really did. Yeah. I thought it did Star Trek better than, at the time, what Star Trek was doing.
Yes, absolutely.
That's not true anymore. Strange New Worlds, I think, it's quickly becoming my favorite all-time Star Trek series. It really is. It's so good.
I completely agree. And you know what? I've seen a couple of the original series episodes over the last few weeks. It's Christmas time and TV is full of lots of reruns.
Yep.
And I've switched on and watched a couple of them, you know. And, you know, like all TV shows, some of them are good, some of them are bad. The ones that hold up really well. And you can see, even though it's much in terms of production design and even production approach, it's much much simpler than Strange New Worlds is. You can see, if you're a Strange New Worlds fan, how they've captured the DNA of that original show 100%. In this new one. And that's one of the reasons it works very well. Because we've had Star Trek series with all the, you know, the pretty set design and the much, much more money and the better special effects and everything. But Strange New Worlds really kind of gets what Star Trek's about and has really... Even though they've taken different approach to different characters, they really got it right.
Yeah, they got the DNA correct.
Yeah, they have a much bigger ensemble of characters than the three in the original series, but it all kind of hangs together and works.
Well, my only thing that concerns me is the captain's going to eventually die because Kurt's got to have to come in. But yeah. I don't want him to at this point. I like this captain. He's so good.
Yeah, and you know what? They've set up that he has a fixed lifespan. Yep. We know what happens to him because of what happened in the original series. But you know what? They could do it. They haven't said when that's going to happen. They could do it for years.
Oh, yeah, I know.
They won't because it costs a lot of money.
Did you see the thing that somebody made about Kirk and Spock's last thing? It's CGI.
Right.
Did you see? I don't know if you saw it.
No, you know what? I see, because there's so much of that kind of re-CGI-ing of Star Trek now. And the problem
is...
Oh,
no, this is different. No, this is different.
Yeah, but you click... The problem is you see these things and you click on them and 90% of them are really terrible fan service things. So you can't separate the good stuff from the bad stuff until
Shatner
you watch it.
Yeah, I think Shatner had something to do with it, and so did Leonard Nimoy's family.
Right.
It is fantastic. There's no dialogue. It's basically Kurt dies.
Right.
And he walks, let me put it that way, somewhere. And then eventually there's Spock. And it's wow. If you're into Star Trek, you've probably seen this. And I'm not going to say anything more. You need to search it out.
I'll have to go and find it, yeah.
But let's talk about the Orville for a second, because I was reading this article and I forgot about this episode. It's actually two episodes, but mostly about the one. In season two, the pilot, what is his name? Gordon.
Gordon, that's right. Yeah.
He finds a cell phone, like an old iPhone.
That's it, yeah.
And he recreates this person's life, kind of. And he kind of falls in love with this girl. But eventually he lets it go because she's not real, you know. And he moves on, but...
This episode, I remember, was really clever because what it did is it took something they did several times in The Next Generation, which is character falls in love with a hologram. Yeah, but it did it in a different way.
Yes.
And it was really touching.
Well, because this was a real person that he recreated her life, kind of, because there's video, there's pictures, there's the apartment. He kind of knows who she is. And the computer does a really good job of kind of making her real on their... I guess it's called a holodeck or whatever it is. And he falls in love with this person. And at the end of the episode, it was called Lasting Impressions. At the end, he kind of, you know, lets it go because it's not real. And you can't you can't fall in love with something like that's not real.
And it was a good episode. It was. And it was good to give that character something to do more than just generally being the snarky comic relief, which is what he tended to be a lot of the time in the series. So
then in season three... They have an episode where he gets sent back in time to 2015, and this is called Twice in a Lifetime. And for the first, I don't know, year or two or whatever, he stays away from anybody because he doesn't want to fuck around with the timeline. But eventually he gets lonely, and he goes out and he finds her, and he finds this actual person, and he falls in love with her, and she falls in love with him. They have a family. Yeah. And he spends 10 years with her. And then the captain and they show up and they're like, dude, you can't do this.
Yeah.
And he is not going to go back with them. He wants his life. He's in love with her. And so what they do, the captain, is they then travel farther back in time to 2015 and pluck him out of the forest before it even happens.
Yeah.
But then the cruel thing is they actually tell him.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, we had to go back and get you now. And he was happy to see me. He's like, thank God you guys rescued me. They're like, oh, actually, you know, when we first came back, it was 10 years ago. And you know that Laurel lady that you fell in love with on the hologram? You actually met her, had a family. You were living a life. You were happy. But we plucked you out of that because we don't want you messing with the time. It was such a... It's the opposite of what they would have done in Star Trek.
Well, Star Trek was always about the neat resolution.
Yes.
And with this, with the, one of the joys of the Orville was that they didn't do neat resolutions very often, unless the plot absolutely demanded it. And they really did try and lay consequences on the characters. And so, you know,
the captain does not come across as... I don't want to say he's a villain, well, but he robbed this guy of happiness.
Yeah, well, yeah, because unfortunately he had to do it because it destroyed the timeline. I mean, that was the issue, is they couldn't leave it be because it had messed up the timeline. And the reason he tells him is to make sure that the guy doesn't ever try and do it again because he knows he's prone to doing this sort of thing.
Yeah.
So he has to show him the consequence. And it is, you know, a smack in the face to a character who's... You know,
he was comic relief a lot of the time.
He was comic relief, but actually he's quite a tragic character because he's a heavy drinker. And the reason he's a heavy drinker is because you can tell most of the time he's quite unfulfilled and a bit of a slacker. And, you know, doesn't really seem to be...
He's really unhappy most of the time.
And also as well, yeah, he's normally the one who's like the voice of reason when the captain does something stupid. He's normally the one saying, look, you can't do this. So this was a bit of a role reversal. It was really cleverly done. But it does kind of get you in the feels, you know, and it is much better than in some respects than just having the, oh, well, you know, we went back and fixed it. And, you know, if you are going to have time travel in these shows,
they did it with respect. Yeah. And they didn't play the captain in a very good light. I mean, he does kind of come across as a villainish kind of character.
This is a case where he has to pull rank and say, you might be my friend and everything, but these are consequences, and we can't do this again. Even though the whole end of the second season was them exactly doing the same thing.
Exactly.
Which was, you know, pulling a character and avoiding a change in the timeline and damn the consequences, you know, so...
I just came across this article and I was like, I bet David would have something to say about this because this is some of the best Orville that they ever made.
Well,
and I really hope they come out with a new, because my understanding is, they said he wasn't going to because he got the TED TV series.
Yeah.
But my understanding is that was a complete flop. Nobody watched it. So now it looks like they may be doing another Orville, which I'm fine with.
I'd love it if they could pull that off. Because, I watched a couple of episodes of the TED TV show, and it was just like, why did you even do this?
It's terrible.
I mean, even the second movie, the first movie, let's talk about TED for a minute. The first movie was was wonderful.
It's crass, but it's fun, and it's okay.
But it was one of those things like, you know, what if we took one of these magical story ideas and twisted it and said, but let's make it real. Let's not make it all cutesy. Let's make it real. You know, the toy doesn't disappear at the end, but grows up with the boy and turns out to be as horrible a human being as many mid-20s guys.
He curses all the time.
Exactly. And let's build a story around that. And actually, I really liked the first one. But the thing is, that was kind of great as it was. There was no need to do any more.
No, the second one was terrible.
The second one was terrible. And then you think, oh, they're doing a TV series. And, of course, the TV series is terrible as well because, really, it's a one-movie idea, you know. And to try and milk it for money, which is what it appeared to be, is probably a bad idea. But the question is when these shows break up, is it possible to bring the gang back together in a way that make them as good as they originally were?
Even if they can't bring everybody back together... Even if it's a new captain, just bring a few of the I think the world, the universe they created in the Orville was really good. I really enjoyed it. I'd like to see more stories there.
The problem is Strange New Worlds is out there now. And so the question is would anybody else be willing to put in that time and money to compete? I'm not sure. Well, I'm not sure whether some people are. A lot of people would go, you know, Star Trek's out there. We can't
Dude, they're can't making do Star a billion Trek. Dollars on Wheel of Time at the same time they're making... A new Game of Thrones at the same time they're making Lord of the Rings. Come on. They can,
yeah, but
they
the, can, somebody the Orville was not that big. That's the problem. Is it was much beloved by those of us who liked it, but it wasn't that sort of success. And don't get me wrong, I think it's far, far better than a lot of the dross that these streaming companies are spending money on at the moment.
I think it comes down to Seth. I think if Seth says he'll do it, a streaming service will 100% pick it up.
No, I mean,
they're all starving for content.
Yeah, but and I just wish they'd stop spending billions of dollars on some of the stuff, because I've got to say, having just watched the second season of The Rings of Power, I really enjoyed it, but it's not worth the money they're spending on it. It's not that good.
I like it, but here's what I think. This is how you have to think about it. It's fan fiction.
Yeah, but you shouldn't spend $1 billion a season on fan fiction.
You always focus on the dollar amount. I don't give a shit how much they're spending on it.
Well, I do because you know what? You could spend that money and get 5 good series out of it rather than just 1 mediocre series.
Or 3 That's executives will buy a new yacht. So screw it. Make a series. Could be great.
Yeah.
Entertain me. I don't care how much they spend. Let's talk about movies for a second and other stuff. I assume that you saw the new Superman trailer.
I did.
Wow. I wasn't sure what to think at first, but the second time I watched it through, at first I thought, really, you're bringing crypto in? But the second time I watched it, I was like, you know what? I'm kind of into this. I really want to see this. This is going back to my childhood and the Superman I grew up with.
Yeah, the first time I saw it, I went, ugh.
Yep.
You know, I didn't like the look of the new Superman. Especially when he's Clark Kent.
I like that part.
Well, but then I thought, no, this kind of works, because this is not just a guy with glasses on. You know, you want him to look, you know, part of the problem. I like Henry Cavill, for instance, when he was Clark Kent, he was like, come on, you're not kidding anybody. That guy's not Superman. Yeah, he's built like a brick outhouse. Yeah, he's wider at the top than the bottom. And, you know, you can tell he's a huge buff guy wearing glasses, and it just wasn't really convincing that he could fool somebody's Clark Kent. This actor, and I don't know who he is, but you know, when he's Clark Kent, you kind of get, nobody's going to think that guy's Superman.
He's pulling it off the same way that Christopher Reeves did.
Yeah, exactly. And I think bringing a lot more of the comics book stuff into it, immediately starting with a world where there are other superheroes.
Guy Gardner.
Guy Gardner rocking that haircut.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. You know, the fact that it's quite clear from the plot, what we see in the bits in this movie, that Superman is not always praised as a god. You know, there are people who are hating on him in this. He clears to be really struggling with some stuff. He's obviously facing some sort of big bad who can give Superman a nosebleed and need the dog to save him. I thought all of it is, you know, look, this is fresh. This is new.
Yeah.
This is different. And yet at the same time, you can tell the respect for the stuff that's come before, because we've still got the John Williams theme playing in the background. You know, yeah, I was quite, after watching this a couple of times, I was quite excited for this. And what I found interesting is, Leanne and Charlotte went yesterday to the movies to see the new Wicked movie, which they really enjoyed. They're big musical fans.
Yeah.
And they showed that teaser trailer beforehand. And Leanne said to me when she came home, she said, I saw this trailer for Superman. She said, wow, that looks really good.
Yeah.
And that's a litmus test for me, because she likes superheroes, but she's not a fangirl like we are. She said that looked really good. And she liked the dog. So,
I've saw some TikTok videos, people looking at the camera going, James Gunn, just so you know, if anything bad happens to that dog, I finally tried to go back and watch the new Joker movie. I can't do it. It's so bad. I thought, okay, you know, I'm going to give this a fair shot again. And I got maybe 10 minutes past where I got the last time I tried it. I was just like, it's such garbage. And right afterwards, I saw the news that Batman 2 has been pushed back another year. Now it's 2027 or something like that. And I'm like, just cancel it. Just all of this other stuff that's surrounding the DC stuff, just cancel all of it. It's just the DCU now. That's it. If it doesn't fit in with the DC, just don't. You're just confusing everything just the way you did before. Stop it.
But you know those
one Batman. That's it.
You know those execs with the yachts, right? That you were just talking about. The problem is they can't do that because their mindset is just, well, the last one made a lot of money, so we must do it again. And that was the problem with Joker 2. And I believe one of the reasons that they're struggling with the Batman is Pattinson's availability.
Well, that and they, James Gunn said he still hasn't seen a script for Batman 2.
Well, they haven't even got a script yet. Well, that's ridiculous. Yeah. Why?
It's like, just cancel it at this point.
Just, yeah. Well, obviously Gunn's not interested. You know, one presumes there will be hooks in the Superman movie to Batman. I would imagine, you know, because he's got everything else in there. And
just give us the one Batman. Just give us, you know.
But I can imagine those execs again going, well, you know, we've got the Pattinson Batman. We know people like that. Whereas if, you know, we go with what Gunn's doing, that might not be successful. And we need the money. We need those yachts. You're absolutely right. And to be honest with you, yeah, cancel it. Batman, give him a rest.
Yes. We don't need a Batman movie every 2 years.
We don't need, we don't. We've had a lot of Batman and, you know, do it in another medium. Make a Batman TV show. You know, to move that whole thing, you've got the Pattinson Batman and then you've got the Penguin TV show. So, right? So move him over to TV.
Yes.
Yeah, recast the actor. Yeah, scale it all down.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think it would work perfect there.
Do Batman in TV or do it in miniseries or do it whatever.
Yep.
Yeah.
For the cinematic universe, just stop.
Well, you can't have two. That's the problem. If you're going to have one, you can't really have two.
Right. I watched Kraven the Hunter.
I feel for you.
You know, it's not as bad as Madam Web. It's actually better than Madam Web.
Right. Well, that's a pretty low bar. I mean,
it's better than the new Venom movie.
This goes to what we've just been talking about is that, you know, and something I say that Sony are spending millions and millions of dollars on this crap. Yeah. Well, where they could be doing something good.
Well, they've been saying now they're saying that there's a lot of talk in Sony that they're just going to sell the rights back for all the movies back to Marvel. Obviously, yeah.
Why they didn't have that idea 3-4 years ago, I've no idea whatsoever.
Well, because keep thinking they know what they're doing. They've had one good project recently, and that's the two Spider-Man animated movies. Mm-hmm. And they're brilliant. They're some of the best Spider-Man I've ever seen on screen. They really are. Yep. But they really don't feel like Sony Productions. You know, it feels like Sony just let the creatives do what they want to do, which is what they should have been doing with all the Spider-Man stuff that they have.
Well, also as well, they should let the creatives select the projects. The problem is they're saying, well, which project we're going to do Venom, all right? You know, and the first one was fun. They got increasingly less fun as time went on.
I watched the new one, too, and it's awful.
Yeah.
The Last Dance, it's so bad. It makes no sense on any level. They're trying to set up a big bat. It's just really, really bad.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that Sony has finally learned their lesson. Just sell the property back to the people that know what to do with it, because you clearly don't. Now one of the execs that's retiring, but he's got fired, is saying, well, it's the press's fault. They keep blasting our Spider-Man verse movies. It's because you're taking not great characters that their only appeal is that they're a foil to Spider-Man, and you're trying to make them heroes, and it doesn't work. No. And all of these movies, other than Madam Web, these are all bad guys, and you're trying to make them like Wolverine or something, and it just doesn't work.
Well, not only that, it's these characters are foils to Spider-Man. They reflect part of Spider-Man's character. So if you don't have Spider-Man there, they're really kind of pointless.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of all of that, generally these films, no matter what the content is, the original character, everything, the idea is mediocre to start with, and then they are made in a mediocre but very expensive way.
Yeah.
And so, I think we've said this before. It's like the late 80s, early 90s, after the success of originally the Superman movie, but then the
Batman.
The the Batman movie. Yeah, the Michael Keaton Batman movie. We had a series of these kind of superhero trope knockoff movies with various different characters, some original, some plucked from the pages of comics and this sort of thing. And they were all terrible. And Sony is just churning those out writ large over and over again.
The they're difference all basically is they're making, the same movie. They're not making money off them now. That's the biggest difference. Yeah. They're losing their ass off.
You know what? Look, when somebody turns out a Spawn movie in the late 80s.
Well, right? But you got to remember, Spawn was really big into comic books. And yeah, there was every reason to believe that this was going to be the next big thing.
Well, yeah, but the movie was terrible.
Oh, it's awful. And, it's so bad on every level.
But the difference was you could kind of live with those movies when they were made for under $100 million. Because it was like, okay, well, they had a shot. And it was either bad or it was mediocre, whatever. Some of them were better than others. Some of them, you know, we talked about Darkman a few weeks ago, which was one of those type of movies, but actually it kind of was better than the sum of its parts. And now we look back more fondly on it. And a few of these movies are like that.
Yeah.
But the problem is when you spend $200 million on one of these things and it stinks.
Yeah.
Again, I look at it and go
over and over.
Yeah. How much better stuff could you have done with that money without throwing it down the toilet on this crap? And this is what irritates me about the whole media industry at the moment. Video games, TV shows, movies in particular, yeah, is they are throwing money down the drain on this garbage. And in the meantime, projects which we are quality and we like, they don't get a look in. How much opportunity has been lost of new properties, new stuff that might be really, really great that we don't get to see because these idiots who run these companies want to spend, I'll drop $200 million on Kraven the Hunter because, it's associated with Spider-Man and I reckon it's a sure thing. These guys are idiots. I don't understand why they're all fired.
Then again, we get something, and I don't know if you've watched this yet. I saw the previews and I was like, yeah, maybe. And then I'm halfway through the series. And these are very small, 10 to 15, some of them are 20 minutes long, standalone episodes. It's called Secret Level. It's on Amazon. And it's taking, the idea is, hey, we're going to do these in, they're all CGI. Some of them are game engine type stuff. But it's some of your favorite video games. We're going to make small little movies out of them. And let's see, I just finished episode 7 and there's 15. Yeah, it was 15. The first one is called Dungeons and Dragons, The Queen's Cradle. It's 16 minutes long, but realistically it's about 12 minutes because 5 minutes is nothing but credits. I thought I'm going to watch the first episode just to see if it's worth watching. And it was freaking fantastic. I was blown away. I enjoyed the hell out. And I was like, more of that, please. So every one of these that I've watched so far, with one exception, has been really, really good. The one that was crap is Pac-Man. Why bother?
So this kind of underscores the point I've just been making. I'd never heard of this. It's made by Tim Miller, for God's sake.
Yep.
The director of the first Deadpool movie.
Yep.
Yeah? So I'm not surprised it's good. But again, it's buried in the streaming services. I've never come across it, and I look at Amazon Prime all the time.
Yeah.
You know, but you know what? They put Rings of Power straight in my face and Wheel of Time straight in my face every time I turn the damn thing
exactly.
on.
Exactly. And here's something that's unique. It's taking existing properties, it's giving them little snippet movies, and it's so good. I mean, I'm blown away by the quality of this. So I'm not even joking. The one that I thought was going to be like, ugh, Unreal Tournament, I was like, yeah, okay. No, it was great. It was really good. Warhammer, I know nothing about Warhammer. I've never played it. The little movie, it's 19 minutes long. Great. Yep. Crossfire is the one I just watched. It was good. I wouldn't say it was great, but the graphics were amazing. The story was entertaining.
I've never even heard of the video game behind that.
Yeah. There's one called New World, The Once and Future King. I watched it and I thought, that was Arnold Schwarzenegger. And it, sure enough, it was. Yeah. He plays this, there's this island that you live forever on. You can't die. And he is a king. And he comes to invade, but everyone except for him and this one other one arm guy dies. And he keeps trying to take over the island, and he's a buffoon. And right. Arnold plays it perfectly. This it's so good. I'm blown away by the quality of these. I'm so entertained by this. One of them, the second one, is a young martial artist is bent on revenge. It's really good. I don't want to ruin any of these for you, but one of them I'm looking forward to, episode 10, Mega Man start. Yeah. I'm like, ooh, it's only 8 minutes long. Sounds good.
Yeah. So I'm going to watch these based on your recommendation.
I'm sure they're not all great, but so far, six of the seven have been really good.
But again, this is the sort of thing you want to see.
Exactly.
You kind of know. As great as idea is, if Tim Miller did not have the rep he already had, this never would have got made.
Exactly.
Right?
But that's you got to cash in on your...
No, I don't mind that.
Why aren't they promoting the shit out of this?
Yeah, that's the first thing. But the second thing is how many people starting out in the industry with these great ideas don't get a chance to do anything because they're never going to have a shot because there's no money available unless you're doing $200 million on Kraven the Hunter.
Yeah. Agreed.
Really? Oh, you know, and what I find interesting about this as well is that, you know, historically, it's gotten better recently. I mean, I think the Fallout TV series is a prime example of how to do video game adaptation properly. But video game adaptation in movies and TV shows has often been difficult. And, you know, to find something that's basically taking a whole load of video games and mostly pulling it off is really exciting to me.
What I like about this is they're not using... It's not live action, it's animation, but it's the video game animation. So it's not quite realistic, but almost completely realistic. Why aren't we doing a show like that?
No, because again, they'd rather waste hundreds of million dollars trying to make a video game like that, which then, if it doesn't do gangbusters in the first 2 weeks, they write off as a failure and shut the studio. You know, they should absolutely be doing animation in that technology because it would revolutionize animation in you know, it would allow them to have a completely different style of animation.
This is so good, it pisses me off that we don't get more of stuff like this. Just do this more. This is what we want. And they don't listen. What we get instead is for 2 weeks solid, you go to Amazon's streaming service and it's Red One. Oh, look, it's The Rock. I watched it. It's garbage.
Yeah.
Just garbage. It's Captain America and Black Adam. Awesome. Now, don't get me wrong. Chris Evans is great in the show. He really is.
Yeah.
The Rock is The Rock. He only knows how to play one character, so that's all he does. Simmons is in it. He's Santa Claus, and he's ripped. Okay, fine. But the CGI looks fine. But it's just, it's so tropey. It's so predictable. It's kind of boring. The only time it's any good at all is when Chris Evans is a fish out of water finding out all these mystical creatures actually exist. That's the only time it's good. Once you're past that and he teams up with The Rock, and you already know how it's going to end within 5 minutes of watching it, then it's boring and who cares? Then it's a CGI fest and The Rock gets to be The Rock.
And not only that, this movie's been done before.
Oh, it's
100 times. Yes. But even this style, the idea of, you know, a super technological Santa Claus.
It's been done.
There was an animated movie. I think it might have been, maybe it was Aardman or not. It wasn't in the claymation style. It was a proper animated movie.
No, I remember what you're talking about.
Yeah. Arthur Christmas.
Yep.
Yeah, which basically was the same. This was the same movie. You know, Christmas goes wrong because this technology goes wrong and people have to step in and save it. Only it was an animated movie. It had far more charm than this Drek did.
Yeah, it was terrible. I mean, there's good parts in it. I like J.K. Simmons. He's good in the role. And Chris Evans is Chris Evans. I mean, I think he is a fantastic actor, and he can change who he plays. That's the nice thing.
Oh yeah,
because his character in this is nothing like Captain America.
Yeah, I never forget that the thing that got me about Chris Evans was two things. First of all, when he became Captain America, it was like I was like 20 minutes, half an hour in the movie before I remembered that he'd played Johnny Storm in the Fantastic Four because he was so different. so different, even though he looks broadly the same. Yeah. Well, I didn't remember him in Sucker Punch, but the other one was the original movie Snowpiercer, not the Korean the one, but the American remake. Yeah, yeah, not the TV show.
Well, he did that after Captain America, though.
He did, yeah. But the point is, again, I watched the whole movie without realizing it was him because he was so different.
Yeah,
and it wasn't just the beard, you know.
He plays Captain America the way Captain America needs to be.
Yeah.
With a naivety, with a innocence, but yet he's a soldier. When it comes right down to it, he'll sacrifice himself to do the right thing. But he's Captain America. You know he's always going to do the right thing.
I saw a quote the other day from one of the actors who I think died this year. Might have been Donald Sutherland.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he died.
He died this year. Anyway, I forget who it was. Maybe it was a living actor or not. But anyway, it really kind of struck me. The quote was, well, you know what? When an actor gets a script, he says you have dialogue on the page and movement and a scene and what's going on. He said, and we read all of that out. He said, that's 10%. 90% is what's not on the page.
Yes.
And he said, that's where an actor lives.
Yes. I would agree with that.
So, it's nothing to do with, you know.
With the director as well. The director still has to, if you don't have a director, the actor doesn't have anywhere to go. But, the director has to bring it all together.
The actor can make their own choices. The director chooses the choices they like. But the point is, the actor is inhabit not the script, but everything else.
Yes.
And good actors, like Chris Evans, can do that.
Yeah.
And bad actors like The Rock can't.
Correct. Exactly. And with that, we're going to wrap up this episode of The Geeks Pub. We'd love to get feedback from you. It's theshow@geekspubpodcast.com. Of course, you can go to geekspubpodcast.com and leave a message in the show notes, or go to the main website, mymac.com. That's where we post this show. We also post Tech Fan, and we'll be back in 2025.
You've definitely got a lost decade somewhere.
2025, we'll be back with Tech Fan, and make sure you check out mymac.com, because the 1,000th episode is about to drop. David and I are both on the MyMac podcast for that episode. You're on there, yeah?
Yeah.
You did a thing with Guy.
I did.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to listening to that myself. I'll skip over my own part because I already know what I said. Hopefully he'll chop that down a little bit because it was too long, but we'll see.
Well, maybe he'll chop it up and you'll say something completely different.
That'd be all right with me too. David, I'll see you in a week.
See you then. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.